The old elites are clinging to a sinking ship in Davos. Now, the elites, as we call them, I don't know why, they're trying to grasp onto power as the entire world is starting to reject this. Now, I know I've talked a lot about the pendulum swinging from centralization to decentralization, and a lot of you don't understand this, and I'm going to break it down to you for today. We can see how, while they are clinging to the last grips of globalism, and they're trying to hold it together, at the same time, the world is rejecting it. So in this video, I'm going to break down some actual clips. I have clips of video from the meeting in Davos that the World Economic Forum just had. I'm going to play some clips you're going to hear directly out of their mouth, not from me. And then we're going to discuss it so you can see how scared they are, what policies and plans they're trying to enact on you, no matter where you live in the world. And then we're going to talk about a few people that went to Davos and just completely smashed their entire narrative, stood up in the face. We're talking about Milei from Argentina and another surprise one that I have for you that completely dismantled them. And you can see the way the world is changing right before our eyes. I'm excited for this video. Let's go ahead and just get right into it. All right, welcome to the channel. If you're new, my name is Mark Moss. I make these videos to change the way you think about money. Now, we talk about money, but of course, today we're going to talk a little bit about something different, but it drives money, and it's actually being driven by money. It's the massive amount of fiat money printing that's amassed this power for these global elites, for the people at the WEF to sit back from their, you know, high horse and try to plan things for you and I, the lowly peasants. And of course, these things are attacking our money, the food, the energy and the money. Those are the three attack vectors, right? That's what we've learned. We've talked about it many times. And so I want to change the way you think about money. We're going to take back our money. We're going to take back the power and the control. But let's just dive down in this first. We'll show you what they're doing to grip on and how we're going to change that. All right. Now, first of all, who are they? All right. Now, there's lots of they, lots of puppet people, but the face that we know, Klaus Schwab, of course, the old dude with the James, you know, German James Bond accent, John Kerry, of course, from the United States. I mean, the guy is almost senile, still ranting and raving about things nobody cares about. Christine Lagarde, head of the IMF previously, or head of the ECB previously, head of the IMF, a convicted criminal, of course. And we have these people, old people, running the world. Hey, no offense. I love my grandparents. All right. But like, hey, you shouldn't be running the world. And here they are saying things like this. Klaus Schwab says, we need to prepare for an angrier world. Why are we so angry? Why is the world so angry? Well, partly because the world is tired of you, Klaus, spreading dissent. All right. We're going to talk about this. But first of all, let's just recap a little bit. I want to take you back in time just a little bit. What is the World Economic Forum and where did it come from? And what is their track record? Let's just take a look at that for a second. All right. Now, the World Economic Forum was founded in 1971. Surprise, surprise. The same time, yes, that everything else went off the rails, 1971, when the world got off the gold standard. The same time. Now, supposedly, they were coming together to bring global peace by bringing people back together. But yet, that's never actually been their plan. As a matter of fact, what we can see is that since the World Economic Forum has been enacted to bring global peace, they've only made things worse. What do I mean by that? Well, here we are 53 years into their existence. And what we can see from the data, it shows us that at least 150 ongoing armed conflicts have been recorded each year in recent times. Now, prior to the World Economic Forum, the major wars in the world were World War I, II, Korean War, Chinese Civil War, Vietnam War. The total from this period, including World War I and World War II, was 95 wars across the globe. Since the inception of the WEF, we've seen a massive increase in the amount of wars. And of course, that's always been the plan. This peaceful organization is actually anything but peaceful, and you don't have to take my word for it. Let's play a clip directly from the World Economic Forum.
Is that if we want that to happen, a peaceful, just end to this war, the way to get there are more or is more weapons to Ukraine.
Okay, so the way to get peace is more war. Interesting, isn't it? So we actually get peace through more war, because if we don't do war today, we'll do war tomorrow. Or we could just wait and maybe there's war tomorrow. Or maybe we could just cooperate with each other and trade peacefully and we'd have no war at all. How about that? But of course, that's not the plan. As a matter of fact, I'm reminded by this video from Julian Assange that the goal is to have an endless war not a successful war. Let's play this clip from Julian Assange.
So the more credible we are in our military support, the more likely it is that the diplomats will succeed.
So you heard it from Julian Assange. Now, this was back during Afghanistan. He's talking about how wars are a way to take money from you and I, from our pockets, from our kids' future, through from the taxpayers, and put it into the pockets of these multinational companies, the military-industrial complex, if you will. So they use wars to take money from you and I and put it into their pockets. And, of course, the Afghanistan war was ended horribly by the Biden administration, and it instantly right to another war with Ukraine. And now, since support is draining for that war, we'll just go to the Middle East, and you get the point. Endless wars. All right. Now, as I'm saying, this is being rejected around the world. It's not just being rejected by we the people. Nations are rejecting it. And I want to show you the pushback, the smackdown that happened. But before we do that, I want to show you what they're doing to try with all of their strength and might to hang on to any power and credibility that they have. All right. So each force receives an equal and opposite reaction. So the more they squeeze, the more we push back. But the more we push back, the more they squeeze. And the more they squeeze, the more we push back, and so forth. And right now, they are squeezing hard. Let me play you this clip from Ursula von der Leyen. Ursula. So I think in The Little Mermaid, that's like the sea witch. I have daughters, I think, if I'm right. Maybe she's sort of like that. She's the president of the EU Commission. And she described how they plan to maintain their grip over us. Let's go ahead and play this clip.
Dear Klaus, let me go back to the number one concern of the Global Risk Report. Disinformation and misinformation.
So the number one risk that they've identified in the Global Risk Report, the number one that they have identified, is misinformation and disinformation. Now, it's not on top of my list. I'm worried about nuclear war starting. I'm worried about people dying of famine. I'm worried about the border problem that we have from migrants all around the world. I'm worried about a potential recession this year. I'm worried about markets crashing. I'm worried about my daughter getting hit by a car. I am not worried about misinformation and disinformation. Are you? But they've identified as the number one risk. Now, it's the number one risk to them. You see, how dare we peasants have the ability to communicate freely? How dare us have the ability to talk about things they don't want us to talk about? Now, look, you're watching this channel. You already know. The leader of misinformation and disinformation is the state. Everything they've told us, inflation is transitory, it's safe and effective, all of these things have all been proven to be false. The laptop isn't real. It's all been admitted. The origin of the, you know, et cetera. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to say that because who knows what's going to happen here on YouTube or wherever this is being played right now because misinformation. Let me play you another clip just so you can hear exactly what they think about this. Let me play this clip.
For a long time, I was on Twitter, and now it's become such a toxic place that I've concluded it's not a worthwhile place to spend time. And as you
so eeks, because it's toxic environment. If you spread crazy news and insults, and if a journalist says racist things, it can be amended.
Exactly.
Why social media is that they have such big power?
You hear that? So the one platform that has been sort of wrestled back from their grip, thanks to the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, went and took Twitter back, exposed their agenda, showed how the government is using these platforms to manipulate people, and is now allowing open speech. Now they're attacking it. Full-scale attack across Davos, all these people. It's toxic. We can't use it. But did you hear that last part? Did you hear what they said? How dare these journalists share these stories that we don't want people to know? How dare they? How dare these citizens have access to speak freely without our ability to stop them? They're not just saying this behind closed doors. This is not a conspiracy, right? They're saying this on the world stage. These are the clips for you to hear. How dare you? They never intended for you to have these powerful tools. Now, let's keep going down here because I want to show you how they're trying to control things. It's not just enough that they control the information. Of course, if they can keep us from speaking freely and sharing information specifically about them, and more importantly, they can continue to sow seeds of dissent so we can, of course, have more wars, they can hopefully continue to keep that grasp. If they keep us scared, maybe they'll keep their power because we'll need them to protect us. But what else do we need them to protect us from? Well, let's hear from no other than John Kerry, a guy who should have retired a long time ago. Let's hear what he has to say.
Absolutely critical that we accelerate.
I am convinced beyond any doubt that because of the decisions being made in the marketplace now, because, I mean, you know as well as I do, even if, you know, I don't want this, obviously, but if you wound up with a different president who was opposed to climate crisis, I got news for you. No one politician anywhere in the world can undo what is happening now.
So we better accelerate because the whole world's going to die. You know this as good as I do. No, I don't. No, I don't. I don't agree with that. Most people don't. The consensus doesn't agree with that. Now, of course, you're a paid consensus. People do. Most people don't consider that. But did you hear what else he said? Oh, boy, this election, most important of our life. Heaven forbid we get a president in there that doesn't agree with our globalist agenda. The whole world could die. So, again, more fear. Now, if so, we can lay down at their feet and beg for their forgiveness and for their protection. But how will they actually institute these types of climate policies? Of course, you know it's all about carbon. As if the CO2 is like a thermostat. So, oh, the amount of carbon directly says how hot the temperature is. I mean, come on, really? But how will they actually implement this type of control to save us from this existential threat? Don't worry, they told us. Let me play another clip from Davos.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Did you hear that? So they can track you where, not just where you're going, but how you're traveling. Not just what you're eating, but how you're eating, where it came from. They want to track every single little detail of your life. Now he says, we don't have it yet, but don't worry. It's coming. Do you see? So they scare you about the climate like John Kerry, and then don't worry, we'll save you if we can only monitor every single thing that you say, that you do, that you eat, that you travel, not just where you travel, but how you travel. Don't worry. If you give us that control, don't worry, we can save you. They're hanging on to every single little shred of evidence that they can, but there's more. Just like the late night infomercial, there's even more. How else can they implement this without the global cooperation? Well, don't worry. They have a plan. Let me play a clip for you.
It is crucial that leaders from the public and private sectors are convening at the start of such a consequential year for all of us. We are also seeing forces of fragmentation exert pressure on the international system.
So what we need is the public-private partnership. What we need is governments and corporations to work together. If governments and corporations, sort of like the Biden administration and Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, if we could only get the governments and the corporations to work together, then we can, you know, control you. And we can save you. We can save you that way, right? Now, they throw around the word fascism a lot. You know, Donald Trump is a fascist. Remember, like, Mussolini was a fascist. That's like a derogatory term. But what is fascism? Fascism is corporatism. Fascism is the government and the state working together, which is exactly what they want. Now, we've talked about this extensively. I don't want to dig into this. As a matter of fact, last week on my podcast, I talked about a new type of control, sort of like a spinoff of ESG. And this is a new type of company that they're trying to get through the SEC and the New York Stock Exchange will recognize, and it's called a NAC. It's called a natural asset company. And basically what they want to do is all natural assets like aquifers in the ground, you know, springs, like grazing land for cattle, like natural assets, they want to privately own it. And then they want to trade it like a stock on the stock exchange. The SEC is mulling this over to allow it. My guess is it probably goes through. One more way to control it. If they can't control what you do, they'll just wrestle away the control of it. But did you hear what they said at the last part? He said that the world is fragmenting. Yeah, the world is fragmenting. This is exactly what I'm talking about. The pendulum is swinging back. The world is rejecting this. Why? Because it doesn't fit into, you know, human flourishment. You know, for me, I want myself to do well. I want myself to do well for my family, for my kids, my grandkids. I want your life to be better, which is why I try to bring this information to you. How do we navigate this stuff? How do we protect our freedom? How do we make more money? And then how do we help other people with this, right? I talk about all the time, what do we even need money for? I want money so I can have more options for my family and I can help more people, right? But the world doesn't want this. It's against human flourishment. And that's why the world is rejecting it. and you're going to love this next one because, you know, it's one thing when you're in the developed world, you're in America, you're Canada, US, UK, Australia, you know, we have it pretty good. The poorest people in the United States are some of the richest people in the entire world. What about the 2 billion people in the world that are starving every day? What about the half of the world that lives on about less than $5 a day? What about them? Well, we have something for them too. As a matter of fact, there's a new term that they introduced, and let's listen to this. You're going to love this one.
Yeah, unlike an international crime like genocide that involves a specific intent, with ecocide, what we see is actually what people are trying to do, what businesses are trying to do, is make money, is, you know, is farm, is fish, is do all of these things that are producing energy and so on.
Did you hear that? So if you farm, you know, grow food for people, if you fish, you know, feed people. If you create energy, because of course we need that. We die without energy. If you do those things, that's ecocide because you're hurting the earth. You're hurting the earth, ecocide. So now you can't do that because, you know, you're hurting the earth. So what you have to do is you have to let the multinational corporations handle that for you. They know how to do it in a non-ecocide way, I suppose. Remember the three attack vectors. Henry Kissinger told us these. Now, who trained Klaus Schwab? Of course, it was Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger said, control the food, you control the people. Control the energy, you control the continent. Control the money, you control the world. That's exactly what they're talking about. We can see farms are under attack all over the world. Now, I know this is scary. I know this is all doom and gloom, but I'm not here to scare you. What I'm here to do is actually to encourage you. Because while they are clinging on to any shred of control that they can have left, and they're trying to put these things in place like censorship and control over food and control over money, while they're trying to do that, the world is rejecting it on a grand stage. And the new president of Argentina, Milei, came out and just gave them a massive rebuke. I want to give you some of the highlights because you should be encouraged by this. And I want to play you another interview after this that maybe is even better. Let's just play this short clip real quick, and then I'm going to give you a couple highlights.
I'm here to tell you that the Western world is in danger. And it is in danger because those who are supposed to have to defend the values of the West are co-opted by a vision of the world that inexorably leads to socialism and thereby to poverty. Unfortunately, in recent decades, motivated by some well-meaning individuals willing to help others, and others motivated by the wish to belong to a privileged caste, the main leaders of the Western world have abandoned the model of freedom for different versions of what we call collectivism. We're here to tell you that collectivist experiments are never the solution to the problems that afflict the citizens of the world. Rather, they are the root cause. Do believe me, no one better place than us, Argentines, to testify to these 2 points.
Did you hear that? So he said, look, the whole Western world is leaving freedom to go to collectivism or socialism. And Milei is one of the smartest guys out there from what I've seen from him. I don't know him personally. But a lot of people are saying, oh, well, socialism is left and fascism is right. And they try to get all these like versions, different flavors of vanilla called politics. And they try to say that one is opposite of the other. There's extreme right. There's extreme left. What he says is exactly right. They're all collectivism. Meaning collectively, whether it's a fascist way or a socialist way, whether it's more government or more public or public and private, whatever, it's still collectivist as opposed to individualism. In my book, The Uncommunist Manifesto, shameless plug, we'll link it in the show notes down below. In my book, The Uncommunist Manifesto, we expose this. We sort of break this down. I have a diagram that actually shows this. So I love what he's saying here. But let me just bring a couple other things from this speech. It was about a 25-minute speech or so. Let me give you a couple things in here. He said, given the dismal failure of collectivist models and the undeniable advances in the free world, socialists were forced to change their agenda. They left behind the class struggle. So the class struggle was what Marx led, right? Karl Marx and the Communist Manifesto. Well, they left behind the class struggle, the rich and the poor, and the economic system, and instead they replaced it with other supposed social conflicts. Like what? Oh, like, you know, gays against straights and men against women and blacks against whites and on and on and on, which are just as harmful to life and to economic growth. He said, quote, the first of these new battles was the ridiculous and unnatural fight between man and woman. Like, yeah. Why do we have to create a fight there? Men love women. Women love men. That's the way it's always been. And it says that all this intervention it hinders economic process, giving jobs to bureaucrats who have not contributed anything to society. He went on to say, another conflict introduced by socialists is that of humans against nature, claiming that we human beings damage the planet, which should be protected at all costs, going as far as advocating for population control. This is what he said. He gets it. He said, unfortunately, these harmful ideas have taken a stronghold in our society. Neo-Marxists have managed to co-opt the common sense of the Western world. Common sense, like you can't consume something you haven't produced, right? Like natural law, right? He said it's totally corrupted that. And he went on to say common sense, right? And this they have achieved by appropriating the media, culture, and universities. You see, so they're using media in order to co-opt and distort this, which is why they're saying that they need control over Twitter and other social media, because social media and misinformation is the number one risk, they say. It's the number one risk to their agenda. Are you starting to see that? And he called it out exactly. I mean, he just gave these guys one right between the eyes. He wanted to say, quote, the case of Argentina is an empirical demonstration that no matter how rich you may be or how much you may have in terms of natural resources or how skilled your population may be or educated or how many bars of gold you may have in the central bank. So for those of you who don't know, Argentina used to be one of the richest countries in the world, with a very educated population and massive amounts of natural resources. That's what he's talking about. So he says, no matter how rich, how educated, how much resources you have, he says, if measures are adopted that hinder the free functioning of markets, hinder free competition, hinder free price systems, if you hinder trade, if you attack private property, the only possible fate is poverty. End quote. Now think about this. He said it's an empirical demonstration, meaning you can't debate it. This is exactly what happened. It didn't just happen to Argentina. It's happened every single time, 100% of the time. He went on to say, today, states don't need to directly control the means of production because they can do everything through regulations. They control the lives and fates of millions. And then the last one, he says, a good deal of the generally accepted political positions in most Western countries are collectivist variants. So all forms of democracy, socialism, fascism, communism, pick your flavor. They're all basically collectivist agendas. And so you can see there's a new energy happening in the world today. You can feel it. You see the rise of the Jordan Petersons, the rise of the Andrew Tates, the people that will stand up and give it to you straight. We see Meloni get elected over in Italy on this campaign. She's been a little bit neutered, but we still feel good about it. What's happening over in the Netherlands with Milei? We got Bukele down in El Salvador. Trump. I mean, look at Trump. He is smoking Biden in the polls, even though he's got whatever 97 indictments, he's facing a gazillion years in prison. It's because the people, they know what they want. These elites don't understand. I'm going to play you one more clip and then we're going to wrap this up, but you want to hear this one right here because this shows you how the pendulum is swinging back really hard. Let me play this one.
It's laughable that you would or anyone would describe Davos as protecting liberal democracy. It's equally
standing up for it.
It's equally laughable to use the word dictatorship at Davos and aim that at President Trump. In fact, I think that's absurd. But I'm going to step aside from that constructive criticism and instead answer your question.
Yep.
And I'm going to be substantive here. President Trump, if he's the next president, for that matter, I think whoever the next conservative president is going to take on the power of the elites, which I mentioned earlier. But the thing that I want to drive home here, the very reason that I'm here at Davos, is to explain to many people in this room and who are watching, with all due respect, nothing personal, but that you're part of the problem. Political elites tell the average people on 3 or 4 or 5 issues that the reality is X, when in fact reality is Y.
Did you hear that? The elites are not helping anything. They're not solving any problem. In fact, they are the problem because they constantly tell people one thing when the reality is something different. We call that gaslighting. They're constantly lying to us. Now, there was actually Vladimir Putin went and had a speech October of 2021 before the Russia-Ukraine war, and he said the exact same thing. He said that we see with bemusement the paralysis unfolding in countries that have grown accustomed to viewing themselves as flagships of progress. This is Putin saying this. Some countries in the Western countries believe that aggressive blotting out of whole pages of your own history, affirmative action in the interest of minorities, and the requirement to renounce traditional interpretation of basic values such as mother, father, family, and the distinction between sexes as a milestone. This is Putin saying this. So you think all this progress, you think that's something? But there is one thing I'd like to say. The recipes they come up with are nothing new. Paradoxical as it may seem, but this is something we saw in Russia. It happened in our own country. Before and after the 1917 revolution, the Bolsheviks followed the dogmas of Marx and Engels. Incidentally, the Bolsheviks were absolutely intolerant of other opinions different from their own. It's the same thing. Now, when Putin said that, war came out. But you see, this is the pendulum swinging. The world is clowning these elites. Putin's clowning them. President Xi's clowning them. All the global south, the BRICS, they don't want none of that. Imagine people starving in Africa and telling them that they can't fish and grow food and they can't have energy. Imagine that. Imagine how deaf these elites are, thinking they're helping anything, but instead making it worse. But here's the thing. I'm going to end this with this and give you a little bit of hope here and encouragement. The world, the masses, seem to be asleep at the wheel. And we don't need them. We don't need to wake them up. There's a book written called Isaiah's Job. It was written about 100 years ago. It's an amazing book. You can find it on Mises.org, Isaiah's Job. And it talks about the story of Isaiah, the prophet in the Old Testament. And he had to go and he had to tell the people a message. And he was afraid of what was going to happen. He said, I'll never get the masses to agree to this. But see, he didn't need the masses. He only needed the remnant. He needed the few people. You see, the world is being changed. The world is being built by people like you and I, by the builders, by the doers, by the people in the arena doing the real thing. We don't need the masses. The masses are wrong, but they're coming. You see, we need a few people like John Roberts, a few people like Elon Musk, a few people like Jordan Peterson, a few people like President Miele and President Bukele in El Salvador to stand up, and then the masses come along. Will you be part of that solution? Will you help? Will you help swing the pendulum back? I'm going to end it on a quote, and this is from Nietzsche, one of the most famous philosophers. He said that which is falling shall ye also push. All right, that's what I got. I know it's a little bit of a rant today. Let me know what you think in the comments down below. Maybe I'm off my rocker. Let me know. Leave a comment. Tell me. Give me a thumbs up if you like it. If you don't like it, give me a thumbs down. That's okay. But at least tell me why. Maybe you don't agree with my viewpoint, and that's fine. Rather than tell me I'm an idiot, I'd love for you to break down and dispute any of the facts that I've laid out. I love that. Anyway, that's what I got. Subscribe if you're not already subscribed. And that's it. To your success. I'm out.